Fine. So I told you that I would show you how to use an Aruch HaShulchan. Okay. So a little bit about the Aruch HaShulchan. I know Shmuel David's been doing a little bit, but I really wanted to show you how this book works on its own terms. So
Could you talk about
who
the
who
origin?
is the Aruch HaShulchan? Who wrote the Aruch HaShulchan? Oh God.
Cairo.
By this point, you guys should know
Cairo.
That I asked you to that always just assume you should look up their biography. So who wrote the Aruch HaShulchan and when was it written? The Aruch HaShulchan.
Beginning of the 20th century, yes.
Late 19th and early 20th, correct. What? Rabbi Chiel
Mechel
Epstein. Thank you, Josh. See? He was in my shir for a year. He knows he needs to know this.
So,
thank you for proving my point, Josh.
Rabbi, that means you have to be in the shir for a year to know it. It's only been a few weeks, so.
Rabbi Chiel Mechel Epstein.
That's what I just said, yes. When did he live?
Let me click on him.
Wait, a contemporary of the Chabad time?
Not
after the Chabad time.
Chronological
was that again?
1829 to 1908.
There you go. 1829 to 1908.
Lithuania.
Yes. So he eventually is the Rav of Nevardok. But he's a prominent rabbi in Lithuania, in Europe. He is a... he writes a book... I'll say Der HaShulchan Aruch, meaning that it corresponds to each Siman and Shulchan Aruch, but it is not a commentary on Shulchan Aruch, right? So Mishnah Berurah, I showed you the page, right? You have the Shulchan Aruch on top, right? Yes? Right?
The Mishnah Berurah,
and then you have the, right, Mishnah Berurah and the Ber Halacha on the bottom, because it's a commentary on, right? The Aruch HaShulchan is not. It's written by Siman, right, by the same Simanim. So if something is found in Siman Aleph in Shulchan Aruch, it'll be found in Siman Aleph in the Aruch HaShulchan. But it's not written as a commentary in the same way. And that's why I said, if you don't know anything about it, so it's a good place to go, because I'll show you what he does do. Right? What he does, so if you remember, we talked about how in Europe, in Lithuania specifically, the people who are like the heirs of, right, once you have the sort of the creation of the yeshivot, post the Vilna Gaon, right, post the Gra, and you have Falej and all the other yeshivot that are popping up, you do have more people who are writing books that go back to the Sugyot, right, to go back to the Gemara and try to build it from the ground up, rather than just taking their starting point at Shulchan Aruch, and then, you know, just sort of organizing all the later authorities, right, but actually try to go back to the first original sources, right, and the Aruch HaShulchan is one of those books that he, as you'll see in just a second, he will try to establish the halacha for you from the first principles through. Okay?
Wasn't that a lot of pushback to writing just the top, like...
Correct. Yeah, yeah. Right? In that sense,
so
he...
So it's like a wave where, like, at one point they don't want to write down the halacha, then they do, then they don't again?
So, I mean, you'll see, right? But, But yeah, so this is what the Aruch HaShulchan does. Now, yeah, so this is right. This is right, 18, whatever it was, 20, whatever it was, to 1908. Now he writes. Unlike the Mishnah Berurah, the Mishnah Berurah writes on what? What area of halacha is the Mishnah Berurah written on?
Practical halacha.
What area of halacha specifically? No, not at all. Only Aruch Chaim. Right, only Aruch Chaim. Right, the Mishnah Berurah only writes in Aruch Chaim. Right, Aruch Chaim is the section. Eventually, I'll repeat these things enough, and you guys remember it. Remember, Shulchan Aruch is divided into four sections based on the Torah, four sections. Aruch Chaim, which is daily living. So, Brachot, Shabbat, what, Tefillin, Tzitzit, Chagim, things like that. Then there's Yored Deah, which is on ritual laws, on Kashrut, and Nida, Ribit, Staka, Avelut, things like that. Choshen Mishpat, which is monetary law, and yes, and then Eben Ezer is marriage law. So the Mishnah Berurah only writes in Aruch HaShulchan, and only writes in Aruch Chaim. He has other books, most famously the Chavetz Chaim, right, where he writes on Hilchot Lashon Hara, right, Hilchot Shmirat HaLashon, and the like. He does have on random topics. He does have halachot, so he does have a small little book on paying your workers on time. But his main halachic work is on Aruch Chaim. The Aruch HaShulchan, on the other hand, writes on how many of the Chalakim of Shulchan Aruch?
Four
plus. He doesn't only write on the four. He writes on all four, but he also writes Aruch HaShulchan HaAtid, right? The correct was all plus.
Wait,
so
we're talking about Rav Epstein.
Yes. Okay. So Rav Epstein, right, if that makes it easier for you to remember, so writes on all four, plus he writes Aruch HaShulchan HaAtid, where he does the same thing for Kadshim Zrayim and Taharot, right? For sacrificial law, agricultural law, and for purity law, which is not mostly not practical nowadays, and therefore Shulchan Aruch doesn't address it at all. And obviously the Mishnah Berurah doesn't address it, but the Aruch HaShulchan does. Now, was the Aruch HaShulchan written before or after the Mishnah Berurah?
After.
Before. Well, they were
you're both wrong.
They were written at the same time.
So it was written at the same time, and therefore some of it... So, yes. So some of it was written before, some of it was written after, right? Depending on the volume, right? Because they're contemporaneous, so he's writing some of it is before, some of it's after. You're all correct. Fine. Is that better?
Yeah.
You're like, why is you're all wrong? Just say you're all right. Yes. Fine. You're all right. Okay. So.
Participation trophies.
Yay. I guess technically here you are all right. So the Aruch HaShulchan, as I mentioned, so there is this interesting thing that if you look back, the Mishnah Berurah, let's say the Mishnah Berurah nowadays, if you go into most yeshivot, definitely more yeshivish, yeshivot, if something's in the Mishnah Berurah, it's like the word of God. Right? And there are a lot of discussions. And I say that not even, like not as a joke, that a lot of modern discussions will say the Mishnah Berurah is what's called the Posek Acharon. Right? The Posek Acharon is like exactly what it sounds like, the last word. Right? However, this was not always true. And, for many people, let's say 70 years ago, the Aruch HaShulchan was just as, or even more important. So Rav Henkin, Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, who was probably the leading posek in America before Moshe Feinstein. So he felt, and his grandson quotes this in Shuvot B'nei Banaim, that if you have a, when all things being equal, like you don't know how to paskin, and you have a machloket Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan, how do you paskin? Aruch HaShulchan. He thinks Aruch HaShulchan. I'm not saying everyone says that. I'm just giving you an idea that this idea that Mishnah Berurah is like the posek, not everyone agreed with this. So Rav Henkin thought that, no, you paskin like the Aruch HaShulchan. Now, again, he gives three reasons. One is that the Aruch HaShulchan, unlike the Mishnah Berurah, writes on all of Shulchan Aruch, so it's more comprehensive. The second is that the Aruch HaShulchan was a shul rabbi, right? He was a community rabbi, and Mishnah Berurah was not, and therefore the Aruch HaShulchan will also reflect and defend the common practice in a way that the Mishnah Berurah will not. Right, and the third, now the two of those statements are probably, one of those is definitely true, right? I mean, he did write more, that's obvious. The fact that he was a community rabbi and therefore defends Minhag is probably true also. The third one, which I have literally no input on, I don't know whether it's true, but Rav Henkin said, and he was smarter. I don't know whether that's true. I cannot tell you whether that is true or not. What? I don't know whether that was true. But like I said, what's interesting with the Aruch HaShulchan to me is that despite the fact that it's organized by the simanim of Shulchan Aruch, it is not, as I said...
It exists on its own. It doesn't correct. Exist with the Shulchan Aruch.
Exactly. It's not a commentary on Shulchan Aruch. It's just like if you want to know where something is and you know where it is in Shulchan Aruch, you'll be able to find it in the Aruch HaShulchan, but he's not bound to Shulchan Aruch. And he's not writing a commentary. He's writing an essay on the Gemara, on the halachic topic, right? So if you think more like Yom Shel Shlomo type, right, where I'm going to build this from the ground up, he's doing something more along those lines, but organized, right, on the order of Shulchan Aruch. Okay? Now, what are the assumptions that he takes to his psak? So if you want to try to get a... If you want to sort of really spend a lot of time figuring this out, so there was in the last few years, Rabbi Broid has written two books, one on the methodology of the Mishnah Berurah and one on the methodology of the Aruch HaShulchan, and in each of them he gives at least 100, but I think in the Aruch HaShulchan book it was like 200 something examples to prove these methodological assumptions. So if you want to sort of figure out what his methodology is, you can look there. I can read it to you. One second. Right, the book is called Setting the Table. The Aruch HaShulchan.
Okay, there's a lot of table puns going on in the name of
these. You already said that. All the commentaries are like the tablecloth.
Yes.
Jewish rabbis are funny.
They are hysterical.
They
yes. Yeah, now one of the interesting things is that, I'm not sure I totally agree, but I'll tell you Reb Roy's thesis. Reb Roy's thesis that one of the big differences in the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan is whether or not you treat every halachic machloket as resolvable or irresolvable. What does that mean? So he argues that the Mishnah Berurah fundamentally thinks that treats every safek as every machloket as if it's irresolvable, meaning it's a machloket, and therefore what I'm going to do is organize the different positions, right? But and use certain rules to like, this is the consensus and rule. But like fundamentally, he's not trying to go back to the sugya and say this is right, this is wrong. He's saying, listen, this is the halal, there's a big machloket, right? The most of the achronim say this, so follow that. But you know, if you don't want to, right, b'shat atzak, follow that. But he's more organizing previous sources rather than going through the sugya and saying, I think this is the right decision.
As in, there's a correct decision, there's a wrong decision versus...
The Aruch HaShulchan does that much more. Now, these are the 10 rules he outlines for the Aruch HaShulchan. Again, I'll tell you what they are. We'll see whether they all work. But the following 10 rules or the 10 principles he has in his psak that he identifies. This was a book, again, this was co-written. This one was co-written by Reb Roy and Reb Shlomo Pill. The other one, the Mishnah Berurah one, was, I think, Reb Roy and Rabbi Ira Bedzow. But these are the 10 principles he has. One is that the Aruch HaShulchan follows his own independent understanding of the Gemara, right, and the Rishonim, right? And as we'll see in just a minute, right, he goes back and understands the sources as he feels. Now, he does not follow his own, he doesn't usually follow his own view against the Rishonim, right, against the majority, but he does, and sometimes he'll just be more machmir, but okay. He does often, when there's a lack of clarity, give more weight to the Rambam, and only then to Shulchan Aruch, right? So he gives more weight to the Rambam, let's say Mishnah Berurah does.
So this is the Aruch HaShulchan.
Yes. Okay. Right, Epstein, okay? He does use the rules of Safek Daraita Lechumra and Safek Darabon Lekula, right? You will find that, right? That biblical law will go Lechumra. He, unlike the Mishnah Berurah, who very, very often will say, this is the halacha, but there is another position out there and you should be stringent just to accommodate that view. The Aruch HaShulchan very rarely does that. He very rarely pulls out some shita and says, you have to be stringent like that view just to... He very rarely does that. He does often encourage, but not mandate, going beyond the letter of the law. He does sometimes try to, if there is a Kabbalistic tradition that does not contradict halacha, he will often incorporate it as a legal suggestion. Mishnah Berurah did also. As we mentioned before, that he will uphold as much as possible minhag, right, the custom. He is very sensitive to the modern situation and when reality has changed, and therefore that should change psak. And the 10 is that he does, you will see in his psak, some people will say he's makil, but it's not really makil as much as, right, he's pragmatic. Right, and often he thinks that halacha should be practical, and you will see a very sort of, right, sometimes yeshivish people will insult the Aruch HaShulchan by saying that he has a lot of balabatish svaras, right? What's balabatish svaras?
Midwife,
housewife. No, that's balabusta. Balabatim is just like non-rabbis, is lay people, right? But like, there is a certain, sometimes he won't like go for a very formal one. He will have sort of like a common sense argument, okay? It's a little bit about the Aruch HaShulchan. If you want to really know a lot of the Aruch HaShulchan and you know it in Hebrew, though I think they might have translated English, so Rav Eitam Henkin, Hashem Yikom Damo, I wouldn't say wrote a book. He didn't really write a book. He was in the middle of writing a book and then was killed in a terrorist attack, and his family published what they found on his computer lightly edited. So parts of it read like a book and parts of it read like research that was going up to, you know, going to be a book. But they published a book, and what there is excellent, even though some of it is clearly not sort of fully worked out. Okay. Right. But I want to show you methodologically how, if you didn't know a sugya and you wanted to build it from the Gemara, you could take an Aruch HaShulchan and do that. Okay. Ready? So let's learn it together. So from the top, Ketzad hi mitzvat yeshivat sukkah. What is the mitzvah of dwelling in the sukkah? Ochel v'shotev v'yashen umitayel b'sukkah. You eat, you drink, you sleep, you hang out. V'ken kishemidaberim chavero yidaber imo b'sukkah. And when you're talking with your friends, you should do that in the sukkah. Shezeu beito l'kol yimei ha-sukkot. Because this is your house. Shne'emar b'sukkot teshu shivat yamim. Klomar. Right, so now if you look what he's doing. Now this is basically, that first line is mostly a quote from a Gemara in Sukkah. Right, but here, right, what he does is he will give you the conceptual principle that explains this. Right, it's not just a list of rules, right? He's trying to work through the sugya with you, so he's going to give you the rule. Klomar, the halacha can be boiled down to the following. Shekol yeshivatchem be'ilo hayamim tehei b'sukkah. Your living in these days should be in the Sukkah. V'lo b'bayit, right? That, you want to boil it down to one principle. Live in the sukkah and not in your house. That's the rule. And he'll tell you in a second where he gets this. How do you know that the days include the nights as well? We learn it from comparing it to the korbanot. The inaugural days, rather, of the Mishkan. And now he says, okay, if you want the rule that I just set up for you, that the laws of Sukkah apply both the day and night, where would you look? You would look in, right, in Sukkah, and you would look in Torat Kohanim if you want, right? You would look on that Pasuk in, you seriously lost it since I gave it to you downstairs. You're unbelievable, isn't it? Okay, I mean, I have an extra, but...
Oh, by the way,
trust me, I know.
I had an accordion, like, every year for high school, and the papers in them always, some half the time, ended up worse than papers that were.
He's also lost his train of thought.
Yes. Okay, so now he says, yeah.
It sounds a lot like a rabbi giving a shiur.
Yes, very good, Avi.
A lot like it.
Yeah, meaning, that's what he's doing. He's, you know, that might be a better way to put it. Look, my Rebbe, Reb Lichtenstein, Zatzal, was a big fan of the Aruch HaShulchan. Because, yeah, the Aruch HaShulchan is much more. If you want to understand the sugya, right, from beginning to end, right, you want to get a good, firm understanding of the sugya, you don't know anything, right? Again, you're not going to know everything, but you want to get a grounding from the basics and understand where the halacha comes from and get a good analysis of the sugya. That's what the Aruch HaShulchan is going to give you. And the way the Mishnah Berurah is not at all, right? Right? Mishnah Berurah, that's not what he's doing, right? There's Shulchan Aruch and then commentary on Shulchan Aruch, right? But you see how, like, right, I understand the Hebrew is hard, but...
I knew Hebrew, it would actually be very...
Yes, and that's why they're in the middle of publishing the Aruch HaShulchan in English. They put out one volume.
English.
What?
English?
They just put out a volume. I haven't looked at it.
Let's look at Safari.
On Safari, that had English translation.
All
I
honestly
think it would have been easier to learn the Hebrew than learn
the English. Chevelle is fine.
It was impossible to figure out what that was saying.
Okay, but now, so I want to try to actually do this with you. So then, if you look at Halacha Bet, what does he say? V'zeu she'amru chachameinu zal.
Oh, it's all in English.
Right?
Yeah,
it's not all of it. It's certain simon. This simon is?
Oh, hang on, which, where are we?
I didn't see it. I looked for you guys, but I didn't see it. 639?
Well, you actually looked for us?
I looked, but I didn't see it.
Oh, that's so nice.
I know, I'm so nice.
In my old age, I'm becoming nice.
Right, so then he tells you, Vizeo Sha. Now, where does he get this rule? So he tells you, what's the key text?
No, not this one.
Vizeo Sha Amru Chachaminu Zichronam Livracha. That which Chazal said. Teishvu. So now.
Oh, God. So, do I have a full shot behind me? No, right?
I think
there's
Sukkah, there should be, right?
There's probably a Sukkah over there.
Anyone see a sukkah? Let's see, Rosh Hashanah, Yom HaKiddush, and Bava Metzia, Bava Batra.
Oh, good. No, no, give me a normal one, please. I can't follow that pagination when I'm trying to show you something, right? That doesn't help, right? So, right, so he tells you, where does he get this rule? Why, what rule, the rule that he just came up with, that the rule of sukkah, if you want to boil it down to one sentence, is live in the sukkah, not in your house. Meaning, don't give me a laundry list of rules. Eat, drink, sleep, this. No, that is all an expression of a single principle, which is turn the sukkah into your house, right? And not your house. So he says, look, if you want to know where this is from, open up the Gemara in Sukkah Daf Chavav. And the Gemara there will tell you as follows, that why the Gemara there is talking about Shomrei Ganado Pardisim, those who guard fruit, right? Who like live out in the field to guard the produce, the orchards and whatever. So the Gemara says they are exempt from the sukkah day and night. So the Gemara says, "V'lavdu sukkah hatam v'latvi." Why didn't they build a sukkah out there? So Abaye Amar, what does Abaye say? Three words, three magic words: Teishvu, Ke'ein, Taduru. The pasuk says, "B'sukkah Teishvu shivat yamim," sit in the sukkah or dwell in the sukkah for 7 days. And the Gemara has a three-word phrase that explains everything, which is Teishvu. Live, Ke'ein, look it inside, I gave it to you. Ke'ein, what is Ke'ein? Like, Taduru, right for right here. Right, I'm just reading the Aruch HaJolchan. Dwell in the sukkah, right, that's the continuation, right? Teshvu, the sukkot teshvu shivat yamim. So what does it mean to dwell? Ke'ein, Taduru, the way that you live. You live. Ladur is to live.
Ladur? Right?
Yes, not live like to be alive, ladur, to live any place.
How about everything guard? No,
that. So a dira, right? A dira is an apartment. Right? Like, lagur is like.
To reside.
To reside, yeah, like in a place. Exactly. Right? You live, right? If I live in Israel, like nigar by Israel. I live in my house, it's my dira. It's my apartment, it's my house. I mean, you could, but dar is more like living your life. So now he says, right? And now look what he does, right? He tells you, okay, you want to know where this comes from, so open up the Gemara, and that's the principle. Kiderach shu dar kol shana beveito. Okay? Yes. So, but now he explains it to you, right? He's writing an essay for you, and he says, he's kikato Torah. The Torah requires you lehaniach dirato, to leave your dwelling uvladur kan basukah, and to live here in the sukkah im mitotav uklei tashmisha umatzaotav, with your bed and your whatever you need, right? And now he tells you, where did he get that formulation that to live includes having your bed and your couch and whatever you want, which is, by the way, very common in Israel for people to take out of couches. Because it's pretty predictable that it won't rain. Sometimes it'll rain. This year, Mike, is pretty late. But usually it won't rain on Sukkot, and you'll know if it's going to.
I got rain last year.
It does happen. It does happen. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. But plenty of people do, right? And the weather is beautiful. Sukkot, the weather is perfect.
All y'all Yankees, by the way, who are used to not being able to sleep on your sukkah because it's too cold, sleeping in your sukkah in Israel is... fantastic.
It's wonderful. No, it's not.
No.
Perfect weather. Perfect weather. By Sukkot, it's perfect weather.
I have to be frozen. Sub-zero.
I invite you to my in-laws for a Sukkot. Do you know what Toronto is like, Sukkot? I remember being in Toronto, and I'm like, because like I really do sleep in the Sukkot, but when I lived in Toronto for 3 years, I'm like, is it snowing? No. Right. No.
I would love that.
It was unbelievable. I remember, like, once I tried, and, like, my brother, like, I think it was many, many years ago. Like, my brother's there. I think I was still living, like, probably living in New York. Yeah, we visited. And, like, my brother-in-law is out there sleeping in, like, under three blankets, you know, three sweatshirts, winter coat. And I'm like, what is it outside? 25 degrees, the real feel of five. I think that's mitzvah. I'm, you know, and I'm pretty machmir, but, like, no. That's, you know, as opposed to my sukkah now, where it's like, oh, it's 65 degrees and breezy. Because I live in the hills. At night, it's always cool. So it's like breezy and beautiful. You just, you know, I don't even have walls in my sukkah. It's great. I have only halachic walls. Right, so they all go this tall, and then I, right, they go like, you know, the yay high, and then I leave space up to the sukkah so that then you natural. Like, I have four halachic walls and zero real, no, that's not true, two real ones. Like, the ones that hit the house.
And Ava is supposed to be a wall around the community, and we basically put in doorposts, right? Like, the string on the...
That is an oversimplified thing. No, yes, no, maybe. No, not even. If you're machmir like the Rambam, yes.
Okay, I'm going to go with the Rambam for a second.
Ah, then don't carry in most Erevin.
Well, you can't just pick and decide. How does it work? Because I don't see why an Eruv should be different than a Sukkah. Like, why can't a Sukkah wall work like an Eruv for?
Because you need walls.
And you don't for an Eruv?
No.
Did I say you don't? I think I just told you that if you're going by the Rambam, you do, and don't carry in an Eruv. I think that's what I just said.
And if you don't go by the Rambam?
Ah! Then... then we have a discussion to be had. Okay. So anyways, but he tells you, but not for now. So he says, where do you get this idea that part of living is having your bed, right? From Rashi, right? Just tells you, look at Rashi on the Gemara there. Because Shivat Yamim, Hayamim Adam Osed Sukkato Kevo Beita Arai. So for the 7 days, your sukkah is your primary residence and your house is secondary. So, Hayalo Kelim Naim Umatzot Naot, Malam L'sukkah. You have nice things, good blankets, whatever, bring it to the sukkah. And all your drinking things, bring to the sukkah. Right, your cups and your pitchers. Aval klei achila, but your pots and pans. Lo yale l'sukkah. Your cooking things you don't. And now he tells you, where did I get this idea? Right, again, I'm just showing you how you could pick this up, and if you knew nothing, you would. By the end, have a basic idea. So he said, "Vikach amru b'gemara," because after the Gemara said, "Which Gemara?" So now you would just go, "Oh, daf chavtet that money mishtaya b'mitalelta." So this is an important word to know throughout Hilcha Sukkah is mitalelta. What does mitalelta mean? Sukkah in Aramaic. A sukkah in Aramaic is a mitalelta. So your drinking instruments you have in the sukkah, umani mechla, and your eating things, barmi mitalelta, outside the sukkah. Uperish Rashi, and Rashi explained, now ke'arot, la'achar shachlu behen, sarich lotzian, your plates and stuff, after you finish eating them, take them out, your dirty dishes, out. Right? So, sorry, I jumped to Tosfot. So, the Gemara says, don't have your eating instruments. What does that mean? So he says, Rashi, v'chein katavatur, think that what it means is, your dirty plates. Not your pots and pans, your dirty plates. They leave your sukkah. What? Aval b'tosvot katvu, sheyesh mefarshim kamo kederot v'agnei delisha. Tosvot says it's not your dirty plates after you use them you don't want in the sukkah, it's your pots and pans that you don't want in the sukkah at all.
Does she hold
your
dirty plates in the sukkah?
No, he's saying, but even your, right, your pots and pans, you don't bring in. Probably either. Probably. And he says, now he tells you, okay, so now what has he done? He's quoted the Gemara for you, Rashi and Tosfot, and now what do you want, right? Remember, Avi's thinking, well, this is like a shir, so now what should he try to do? He just did. He gave you Rashi and Tosfot. Now what do you want? No, not yet. So so this is the thing. What did I tell you about the Aruch HaShulchan? It's not that he doesn't, but he's not like the Mishnah. He's not trying to bring you a compendium. What is he trying to do? Tell you what you should do based on how he understands the sugya. So he's giving you an understanding. So what is, if he's trying to give you his understanding of the sugya, then what should he start giving you now? And, well, before that, an explanation, right? Before he gets to the psak, he needs to explain it. To explain why. So what does he say? Vitama. What's the rationale for this? And again, you'll see, he's very simple. Like, he's very clear. The chain taduru binan. You need, those are the magic words. Right, again, teshvu kein taduru. Live in the sukkah as you live in your house. So you need it in your house. He said, in your house, right? Your pots and pans, do you keep them in your living space? Right? You see how he's understanding it in your living space? No, they have their own space in your house.
If you had a very big sukkah, would you be able to leave it in a separate part of the sukkah?
So according to Tosfot, no, it's not the type of thing you should have there. Right? But if you wanted, I guess, to build like a, you know, cabinets into your sukkah, so be nice and organized, you could do that. Right? V'chein perish bahag. And now he quotes the halachot gedolot, who's in the Gaonim. Kigon kedirei u'shvudei u'veitavyo u'veitafei. Right? So these are pots and spits. Right? You don't really want to be in a sukkah with a spit. Right? That thing. You want that in your sukkah? On the middle of your table. And now he tells you, and remember, what else did I tell you, the Aruch HaShulchan? How is the Aruch HaShulchan has two, right, does two things that the Mishnah Berurah doesn't. One is that he traces things from the sukkah for you. He does paskin, but he traces things from the sukkah for you. And then what else did I say? He's very heavily involved in what? Minhag. Right? He cares about the minhag, but not like it's a minhag, it's unquestioned. On the contrary, what does he do? He says, he explains it. He says, this is the minhag and it makes sense, right? So these are reinforcing. He's not going to just, right? If a minhag exists and he can't defend it, right? He might not defend it. But if he can explain the sugya and show how the minhag accords with an understanding of the sugya, then that's great. So look what he just does now. Look next line. V'cheinu minhag ha'olam. And that is indeed the custom. Shlo lachnis kli cheres lo kesukah. To not bring your big clay pots into the sukkah, like your pots, because that normally stays in what's Beit HaMishloach, the kitchen, the cooking quarters, whatever that is. And therefore, he says, so should you bring it in? He says, no, ginayu l'sukkah. Right, it's degrading to the sukkah, because what is he telling you? What is the sukkah supposed to be? Not your just your house, but let's be more specific, your living quarters, right? Aval bekarot la'achar achila. What about your dirty dishes? That's the obvious question, right? Ein ha'olam nizharim. Said the right now. How does he prove that we don't possibly like Rashi, that we allow you to keep your dirty dishes in the sukkah and you don't run out with your dirty dishes?
We don't do that.
Ein ha'olam nizharim. Exactly. People don't care. He said, look around. People aren't careful about this, which shows that we don't paskin like it, right? That's his proof. His proof is there's a machloket Rashi Tosfot. Rashi says, don't have your dirty dishes in the sukkah. Tosfot said it means don't keep your pots. He said, okay, both of those have a certain logic to them. How am I going to figure out which is right? Look around. People don't bring their big, you know, massive pots into the sukkah, and they don't run the second they're finished eating to clear the table, right? They sit, right, in their sukkah and like schmooze when the dirty plates are still on the table. So he says, aha, the custom supports Tosfot against Rashi, and therefore we paskin like Tosfot against Rashi. Do you see any of the hesitation that you sometimes have in the Mishnah Berurah? Because I know you're doing more Mishnah Berurah with Shmuel David. Of, well, it's machalki Rashi Tosfot, v'hamachmir tavar olav bracha, right? If you're stringent like Baal, that's better. Any of that in the Aruch HaShulchan? No, he's like, two possibilities, both make sense. This is what people do, that's not what people do. Done! We have solved our problem. Let's move on with our life! Right? That's what he says. Nice, right? And look, and in case you were wondering, look at the next line. And he says, look, it seems like the world, not the rabbis, the world, that they understand Tosfot and the Bahag to be the primary halacha. And then what does he put in the parentheses? And look how different this is from Mishnah Berurah. V'ayin Magen Avram Siv Katan Gimel. Well, look at Magen Avram. So, is his psak based on Magen Avram?
No.
He said, look, his psak goes like this. Gemara, two sheet and rishonim. Then, how does he determine an apaskin? Minhag, right? He doesn't quote Shulchan Aruch, he doesn't quote Ramah, he doesn't quote the Nosei Caleb, he doesn't quote anybody, right? He says, there's two ways of understanding the sugya. The custom accords with one of them, that's what's right. You want to look at Magen Avram? Good luck. But that's like an afterthought. As opposed to you read the Mishnah Berurah, and what will he say? Kotvu ha'achronim, right? The Achronim wrote, right? It's not, none of this, right? It's a very different style. It's sugya, it's, right? If we have our three prongs, right? Sugya, right? The original sugya, the Rishonim, right? The earlier sources, and Minhag. Which two of are the most prominent to the Aruch HaShulchan, ironically? Right? Sugya and Minhag, right? Like, he will bring in, as we'll see, precedent. But that's not his primary goal here, right? I mean, he does quote Rashi and Tosfot, right? But, like, he's not obsessed with, let's trace it the whole way, right? It's understand the sugya, get the major positions, figure out what makes sense, figure out what accords with the minhag, paskin. For sure, that's not, I'm not challenging the Aruch HaShulchan, right? Look, I have a tremendous amount of respect for the Aruch HaShulchan. I love the Aruch HaShulchan. Really, really, really
more
I do.
Than the Mishnah
yes, I love the Aruch HaShulchan.
More than the Torah?
No. But I love it. I mean, I love the book. I think it's wonderful. You know, I remember once that when I was in yeshiva, Rav Shechter was visiting. And this is like Yadua, that Rav Shechter is much more of a Mishnah Berurah fan. And Rav Lichtenstein was a big Aruch HaShulchan fan, right? And Rav Shechter was sort of off the cuff, made a comment about how, oh, the Aruch HaShulchan, right? He didn't even look up his sources. And how do I know? Because he makes an explicit mistake in Hilchot, I think it was actually in Hilchot Sukkah, right? And he misquotes a Gemara. You see, he wasn't looking in his books. He was doing it by heart, right? And the next day in Shir, right, Rav Lichtenstein was like, before I start Shir, I just want to say a word to defend the Aruch HaShulchan. If you write a running commentary on all of Shulchan Aruch by heart, and the critique you can come up with is he made one mistake in Hilchot Sukkah, right? You're doing pretty well, right? I'm a big fan of the Aruch HaShulchan, as was my Rebbe. I like the Aruch HaShulchan. I love the style, right? I really do. That you go through it, you feel like you're getting the sugya. I also love the Mishnah Berurah in a different way. I happen to like the Aruch HaShulchan. It's funny because when I paskin, I really do care what every source ever said, right? Right? But I find that if I read the Aruch HaShulchan, I have a better grounding in what's going on in the sugya. Then I can read the Mishnah Berurah and I can say, okay, this is the models, right? And now the Mishnah Berurah will give me a summary of what all the Acharonim said. Right, but if I want to just sort of get the basic arguments and understand that line from the Gemara through the Rishonim, right, through practice, right, the Aruch HaShulchan just gives you a very, right, everybody reads the Aruch HaShulchan just like, yeah.
I feel like this is an answer before, but is this enough to like paskin for it? Like Shabbos, you had a question on halacha. Can you just go to the Aruch HaShulchan?
That's exactly what he wants you to do. Yes.
So and we can paskin.
Look, some people will tell you, only Mishnah Berurah. But look, to the extent, I think personally, to the extent that you can open up a Mishnah Berurah and say, I'm paskening this Shaila, you can do the same with the Aruch HaShulchan. Why not? Right? There are people, in especially in the yeshivish world, who really treat the Mishnah Berurah as opposed to Acharon. Right? And like, if the Mishnah Berurah says it, fine. If anyone else says it, like, you have to check it. I'm not like that. Personally, I think, look, you know, again, super controversial thing, maybe not, right? And you'll be able to tell, right? Like, if the Aruch HaShulchan said, the world is, sometimes people use, like, the world has been has been arguing about this and been fighting, then you might want to ask a posik. But you're talking like a basic little, right? You want to learn a halacha and halachot sukkah. You want to figure out what you can do in the sukkah. Why not? That's what this is. This is not a, right? This is not like some, this is a 20th century, late 19th, early 20th century practical halacha book. The difference is that he wants you to understand how this came from the Gemara, not
every other commentary
on. Right. He doesn't care necessarily where you know all of that. Right. And in that sense, it's a really good book it's definitely a good book in yeshiva, right? Because you can get a grounding in the sugya, right? Not just what do I do, but why am I doing what I'm doing, right? It's a very good book that way. It's a very different style from Mishnah Berurah. Yeah. Benjamin.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know how much. I mean, again, it was published only like 100 years ago, no more at this point. What?
That's
yeah, I mean, now watch what happens in Gimel. So remember I told you that it's organized around Shulchan Aruch, but it's not a commentary on Shulchan Aruch? So if you had the Mishnah Berurah, where would this discussion start? At Shulchan Aruch. And then he would tell you what the Achronim say, right? But after he's already paskined, right? He's told you what the Gemara said, the Rishonim said, and told you the Menachem, already told you how you paskined. Only after he's paskined, what does he do? Mention Shulchan Aruch, right? Then in Siv Gimel, he says, for Abotenu, Balei, Shulchan Aruch, Katfu, Kaperish Rashi, Vihatur! Right? And not only does he, right, only then does he quote it, and would you know that, oh, by the way, how do they paskin? Against the minhag, right? He doesn't, but you understand how, this is a point I learned a long time ago, and it's very powerful. Organization is just as powerful for how you think than your bottom line, right? The difference between saying, the Gemara says this, Rashi tells it says this, and Shulchan Aruch paskins like Rashi, but let me defend the minhag, right? What does he do?
He says, he paskins.
Exactly. He tells you, Gemara, Rashi, Tosfot. The minhag is like Tosfot. That is how we paskin. End of discussion. Parenthetically, Shulchan Aruch disagrees with what I just said. Like, afterthought, right? You understand the difference between the structure here. And he says in Halacha Gimel, V'rabotenu ba'alei ha-shulchan aruch katvu kepeirush Rashi v'hatur. V'zeh l'shonam. Now I will quote them. Achal aval kli achila l'achar achila, your dirty dishes, kigon k'deirot u'ka'arot chutz l'tzuka, your dirty dishes, out. V'amenorah, your lamp, b'suka. V'mayta suka k'tana, and if it's too small to have your lamp, so manicha chutz l'tzuka, put it right outside. Ad Kan Lishonam. Right? Shulchan Aruch, is there any two ways about reading Shulchan Aruch? No. Does he care?
No.
No. Look, he says, V'ashava minog dakderot, ein machnis l'suka, af kodem ha'achila, v'akarot ein motzi enaf l'achar achila. He said the minog has literally no connection to that. The minog is as follows. Right? Does he prove it? No. He's like, the minog is as follows. Pots, people don't bring into the sukkah at all. Not before or after you eat. Nope. Right? They no. He's like, the minhag is you don't bring in your pot, you bring it in serving dishes. Right? And you're... No, no, he's just telling you what people do.
No, I know. I'm saying it's annoying
to
have to do that.
Yeah, yeah. And he says, vakarot. And what about your... Now, I assume this will not apply to a... something you cook it in that's also normal to bring to the table. Right?
Like a casserole dish.
Yeah, like a casserole dish. That's normal. But what's not normal is like... Yeah, like your crock pot, right? Or maybe that is normal, but a yeshiva-sized crock pot. You know, like if you go, for those of you who ever go to Gush, you'll see that yeshiva 500 people, the pots are like big enough that, you know, that Moshe can like go inside, standing up, right?
We can cook Moshe.
Right? You know, that was like the worst part of Gush's Torah Nut there includes cleaning those dishes, like Motzei Shabbat. Oh. It's like... Do you know what that's like to clean that thing?
You get in there with that.
Because that doesn't go in the dishwasher. That thing is monstrosity.
You get in there with that and like a pickaxe.
Oh my God, it was the worst. Shtifa was the worst. It took hours.
But how often did you have to do it?
Oh, you would have like one or two weekday Torah Nuyot. Each one was 3 days, like over the course of the year, and one or two Shabbatot over the course of the year.
So you had to do it.
No, there's weekday Torah Nut, and then there's Shabbos Torah Nut.
There were 500 people. You probably couldn't have done it.
No, because it wasn't one person each time. You need, like, it's a group of, like, 10 people each time. No. One person is not cleaning for 500 people.
It takes 10 people to do, and it takes hours, like, 3 hours to do with 10 people?
You're also cleaning up the tables. You're also, it's all of that. Yeah.
Just cleaning the pot for, like, 3 hours with 10 people.
I don't know what they do now, but that's what it was when I was there anyways. Okay, so now he says, right, but it's fascinating, right? He quotes Shulchan Aruch, which goes against the Minhag. And how much time does he spend, like, kicking and screaming and yelling and, it's like,
nothing.
He's like, let me just clarify, that's not the Minhag. The Minhag is that we never bring in serving dishes, not before or after, and dirty dishes, we leave. Umikol makom. He says, nevertheless, I will tell you, that he now, what does he do? He comes up with an interesting compromise position. What's a compromise position?
If you do take the pots in, then you have to take them out immediately.
Very good. Right? He's like, I will combine Rashi and Tosfot in the following way. That Rashi said, right? Rashi says that this is about taking out your dirty dishes. Tosfot said it's about not bringing in your pots and pans. Right? So he says, I will compromise. If you do bring in your pots and pans, like, right? Then I will insist that you take them out when they are dirty.
Well, that doesn't make sense. You're following one.
That's not one. That's two.
Rashi
says it's about dirty dishes. Tosfot said it's about not bringing in dirty pots at all. So he says, if you bring in your pots and now they're dirty, so it's not a compromise. It's, according to both people, it should be out, right? Meaning, that's not a compromise. That's the wrong word. He's like, if it's a dirty pot afterwards, then everybody agrees it shouldn't be there anymore. So he's like, so that, I agree. Now, you understand, does he feel like he needs to defend himself from Shulchan Aruch? No. Not even, no. Why? Because he's like, look, a very plausible read of the sugya is like Tosfot. The Minhag is like Tosfot. Rashi is very interesting. You know why Rashi is interesting? Because if you end up in a situation in which both Rashi and Tosfot would agree your pots should go, then please do, right? Right, and he says, and again, where does he get this idea? Magen Avraham, right? Umikol makom, imichnis klei achila uklei acheres. But if you did bring in your pots and pans, ein hasukah nifselet b'kach. Right. So now he goes to Magen Avraham. Post facto, does it make your sukkah puzzle invalid, unlivable?
No.
No. Why not? Because b'diavad, who does he allow you to rely on? Rashi. But you understand what he just said? This is how different is this from the Mishnah Berurah, right? This is how I want to just recount the structure of what he just said. There's a Gemara, a machloket Rashi Tosfot. The Minhag is like Tosfot. End of story. Ah, Shulchan Aruch Paskins like Rashi. From that, I learned two things. One is that if Rashi and Tosfot both agree the pots should be gone, please do that. Second point is that if post facto you brought in the pots and pans, which according to Tosfot should maybe even invalidate your sukkah because it makes it unlivable, post facto will allow you to rely on Rashi, and I won't paskin that your sukkah is puzzle.
Wait, it should make the entire sukkah puzzle?
Well, while it's there, because it makes it unlivable. He says, post facto, I will not puzzle your sukkah. Right? That is how much, that is what he's doing with Shulchan Aruch, is I will give it, right? Shulchan Aruch is enough to rely on to not post facto puzzle your sukkah. That is what he says, right? Based on that from. Va'akad sheshovin bomayim, ein lachnis loz lasukkah. Your big, like, water bucket, don't bring it into the sukkah. Again, Magen Avraham. Right, sham, meaning ibid. Right. V'chein kelim shamashim bokemach. Your flower, not flowers, but, you know, kneading pots, kneading bowls. V'harevot v'kelim shamashim pilpamim. Chutz l'sukkah. V'chein kli shamashim boharbe melech. Your big salt containers. Shesham notlim l'kelim k'tanim. Right, not your salt shaker, but your bag of salt that you pour into the salt shaker. Leave it outside, right? Leave that outside the sukkah. V'chein yesh l'zer shel alachnis n'er shel cheres b'sukkah. Don't bring in your clay lamps. V'zer shel b'sukkah k'tana in lachnis shum n'er. And then you shouldn't bring a candle into a very small sukkah. Why?
Because it'll burn the cup.
Yeah, very good. Right? Look how, he doesn't like, he's very, this is why some people like him and some people don't like him. Sometimes his svaras, he's very not ashamed to just give you a very common sense Balabat svar. And he says, Hatam pashut, sholo tidlak asuka. The reason is obvious. Your sukkah should not burn down. And then he says, and then you'll say, oh, what is a small sukkah? And how big is a small candle? And da 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 da. And oh, what's his answer?
If it's going to burn down.
What's his answer? He has six words.
Where is it?
End of Gimel. Ve'ein lazeh shiur. There is no measurement to this. Elab kifi hashara. Figure it out. Right? Fi hashara. Look. Does it look like you're going to burn down the sukkah? Don't do it. Does it look like you're not going to burn the sukkah? It's fine. Right? Geniuses. Right? The Aruch HaShulchan. One of the reasons I love him is just like refreshingly, like
he's telling you not to be stupid. Don't be an idiot.
Yes, and he's also telling you not to overformalize everything, right? He's like, the reason you don't bring a candle into a small sukkah is you might burn it down. So please don't overformalize this and say, oh, if the candle is 6 inches of the sukkah, what is the ratio? He's like, I don't know. Look, Lefiyashara, look. Does it look like it's going to burn the sukkah down? Then don't do it. Does it look like it's safe? Then it's okay. Oh, and I'm assuming if you ask the Aruch HaShulchan, oh, but I have an LED lamp that doesn't heat up at all. You know what he'll probably tell you?
That's
fine. Good. Then put it in your sukkah.
Wait.
Can we end this conversation now? Right?
Like, in his lifetime, he may have seen a light bulb.
Yeah, a light bulb.
And they probably didn't have batteries. Do they have battery run things in the time? Probably not.
Oh, they probably wouldn't.
Wait, wait.
No, there would have been some, but they would have been like for miners.
Wait, what year was
he? He died in 1980. No, he definitely has electricity. He talked about
electricity. No.
But would it have been realistic for him?
There would have been these lamps that The only thing that I can think of at the time, there were lamps that miners used, so he may have, like, that were battery-powered, but, like, there wouldn't have been, like, the kind of thing we have today, where it's just a battery-powered light that you just stick in the center of the table.
So. Okay. Right, so you see from the first three halachot, right? Already, right, again, you've been doing a lot of Mishnah Berurah with Shmuel David, right? Yeah. The difference between how you... And I know he gave you a few pieces in the Aruch HaShulchan, but like I said, if you know how to use an Aruch HaShulchan, and you're not just using it to like look up, compare to the Mishnah Berurah, right? But you're actually using the Aruch HaShulchan, right? It's a totally different experience. It's like, I know nothing about this sugya, so what does he do? As Avi said, let me give you a shir. Here's the main Gemara principle you need to know. Here's the organizing principle, right? Here's the main shito. I, Shulchan Aruch, says, look, these are the main shitin Rishonim. This makes sense. The minog, done! Paskin like it. Yalla. Shulchan Aruch? I mean, interesting. I'll mention it. Right? I'm mentioning. But it is not a commentary in Shulchan Aruch. No commentary in Shulchan Aruch would first paskin and only then as an afterthought say, by the way, Shulchan Aruch said the opposite. It's like, I mean, okay, that's very nice. Very nice.
What do you paskin about
in this example? Probably the Aruch HaShulchan.
My question is, why is the name so similar? It's so confusing.
I don't know.
It's like, Mr. Toro.
Okay, let's try one more halacha. And again, I want you to see, right, a lot of those methodological points we talked about, right, how you balance the sugya versus precedent versus minhag. You see, the Aruch HaShulchan, right, cares a lot about the Gemara, right, and explaining things from first principles, and he cares a lot about minhag. And how much does he care about previous authorities?
A bit,
that's the right answer, a bit, right? He uses them insofar as he can explain the sugya. Right, but he's not writing. Shulchan Aruch says this. I am bound to it. He's like, very nice. Okay, right. Lo yaseh shum dashmesh bazui basuka. Don't do anything degrading in the sukkah. Kedesh lo yimitzvah bazuyel v'lav. Why? So mitzvah won't be disgraced in your eyes. V'lochein. This is what it means. Balayla lo yashin b'kli basuka. You're out there at night. You need to use the bathroom. Don't pee in the sukkah. Thank you. Right. That's what he says, right? V'chainli tolin until yadayim, tov shalim chot l'sukkah. And when you want to wash your hands from until yadayim, it's better to go outside the sukkah. Ach, nitil yadayim shachrit, but in the morning, shi samach l'mitato, where the water is near your bed, bechreach litlein b'sukkah. So then, okay, you have to wash them in the sukkah. V'take of miyad yitol klim esukkah, and then take it out. V'chainli ten min alim b'sukkah, and then to leave your shoes there. Ain ala kava, don't do that, right? Now, presumably, if that is the normal thing to do, is to wear shoes, you probably could. Virak belayla, and that's he says at night. Kishecholetz min alav, bechreachin chamal karka itzim etato, right? Aval sharam min alim lo yechnez lo sukkah. He says, let me just clarify. At night, when you come into the sukkah and you take off your shoes to go to sleep, you can leave those in the sukkah. What I mean is, don't like bring all your shoes in the sukkah, right? But like the shoes that you need, okay, so put them in the sukkah. Va'etrog v'lulav, your etrog and lulav, mitzvah she'amdu b'sukkah. That's a mitzvah to be in the sukkah. Af im halulav omed b'kli mayim, even if it's water. V'cheina bagadim she'poshet. When you take off your clothes to get right to go to sleep, im eina mechubadim lo yidnei b'sukkah, yonicham b'sukkah. If it's not mechubad, right, they're dirty and smelly, don't put in the sukkah. Umaklo she'helechimo, your walking stick, im eina umakel mechubad, if it's not dignified, lo yamenu b'sukkah, don't do it. Now you want the principle? Klalo shel davar. Let me summarize this for you. Kol davar shloya mashet beveito b'cheder hanayeh shavo. Anything you wouldn't put in your nice room, right? Your living room, not your closet, whatever. In your living room, right? The nice rooms, right? Lo yishet davar zeh besukah. V'iyav shar l'va'er kol ha'pratim. And again, this is when I love him, right? Because sometimes you'll read some achronim, and what do? Right, you have like 50 pages on what about this type of shoe and what about that type of piece of clothing and right. And his summary is, "E.F. Charlotte of Aircola brought them. I can't explain all the details to you. Here's the principle: whatever you wouldn't have in your living room, your v'chubed bedroom, don't put in the sukkah. Figure it out, people. Right? And again, it is. Now, then he just references very quickly. Right, ayin to us if cotton dollar chain bechal ze tashmish hamita. Right, what does that mean? Ain bechal, what's that? Bechal ze included in this category. What? Tashmish Hamita. What's Tashmish Hamita?
Something that's dead.
Shines?
Sex.
What's that?
It's lying on the bed, which
means. What's that?
What?
God, we don't know what this stuff is. I don't know what these words mean.
And what is he telling you? Right? He says, look at the Taz. What does the Taz say? I'll read you the Taz. Nira she'ein b'chal zu tashmita came into simcha shel mitzvah. Is sex asher in the sukkah?
No.
Because of mitzvah. Right? That's the Taz. What? That's what he says. I will note, obviously, as the poskim point out, that this is assuming that you are have privacy and not like...
It's not like yours.
What?
It's not like yours.
Meaning, correct. It's not like my sukkah with no walls. Correct. Right. Correct. No, with no walls in front of my house. No. Right. No. But if you make right, but if you have like a private sukkah, right, in you know, in a private yard with you know with walls that no one else can see in or hear or whatever, right? So ikra, right. So then the Taz. Now this happens to be a machloket achronim whether this is true. But he poskins could ever push it like the Taz, right? Okay, so let's stop there for now, right? I don't know if we'll go through the whole siman, but like I said, I printed it out for you because I want you to you asked me to show you how to use another book. This is how you use the Aruch HaShulchan, right? And it's great. Meaning the Aruch HaShulchan is just one of these books that like you know.
Good cheer. Let's continue it in this.
We'll continue. Look, I mean, we're definitely going to continue because you know as we're praying for
this format indefinitely.
Okay, we'll see. Right, I'm happy to do it. Meaning, this time I didn't actually trace his sources for you. Right, I showed you what he was doing. Right, in an ideal world, what would you do? Right, you would follow it up. Right, if you really wanted to know the second, you would actually do it. The first time, I just wanted to show you what he's doing. Right, but like I said, the Aruch HaShulchan is a really nice clear share. You read it and you're like, oh, I got something out of it. I understand where this comes from. I have a, right? And there is a certain confidence, right? You read the Aruch HaShulchan and you're just like, he's not scared to tell me what he thinks, right? He's not scared of anybody. It's like, okay, this is what I think.
And chances
are he has a valid opinion. Oh, for sure. For sure he does, right? And he cares a lot about Minhag, right? He cares a lot about this is what people do. And it can be grounded in the sugya. So let's do it, right? Okay, good.